This podcast is intended for investment professionals only. All investing involves risk.
Hello, and welcome to another edition of L&G Talks Asset Management. I'm Nick Jardine, content manager for L&G's private markets platform. And today we'll be talking about an area of the private credit landscape that often doesn't seem to get the airtime we think it deserves. That's so-called crossover credit, the area that lies between investment grade and non-investment grade private credit. I'm delighted to be joined by Stu Hitchcock, L&G's head of private credit portfolio management for this episode. Stu, great to have you with us, and thanks enormously for being here. Anyone who's read your articles on our blog will know that you're a big horror movie fan. So I'm feeling we should maybe give this episode a horror-themed title.
Hi, Nick. This is a good way to start a podcast. I didn't quite expect this, but first of all, it's a pleasure. Lovely to be here. Thanks for having me and all that good stuff. How about as above, so below? That's me thinking off the top of my head about horror movies made in the 2010s. And given we're going to be talking about credit ratings, feels very fitting.
Should probably add that we're not trying to scare anyone with this. There's a lot of positive things about this area of the private credit universe. Let's kick off with some questions. Let's start firstly with just a little bit of an overview who people may not be familiar with our private debt platform. Maybe you can talk a little bit about how L&G looks at the overall private credit universe.
By private, we mean that the investments are typically unlisted, so not traded on a public exchange. When I talk about debt, that should be pretty straightforward. Think committed finance, typically in the form of loans or notes. Again, it's drawn debt, so it's when a borrower or project has a need to term out its financing for a period of time. And these financings can often complement existing bank debt or public bonds in a borrower's cap stack. The investments can range anything in size, really from anything from a couple of million pounds equivalent all the way through to multiple billions, from as short as a month or so all the way through to 50 years plus. Because the investments are buy and hold, we're buy and hold investors typically, we will benefit from some structural protections. That's really the quid pro quo of having an unlisted investment. And what we do is we will benefit from financial and non-financial covenants. And depending on the nature of the issuer or the sector, you may also benefit from security as well, whether that be over assets or cash flows. We characterize the private credit universe or the private debt space, and we'll come on to definitions in a moment, but we think of them being comprised of four key asset classes. You've got corporates, hardly needs much explanation here, but that's lending to a whole gamut of industries that you would expect in other asset classes. Then you have infrastructure. There's real estate, where we're lending secured against all manner of property subsector types. And then there's alternatives. And that's really any credit risk that's in a non-standard format and it often brings enhanced security, kind of additional credit support or priority debt ranking. That could include things like short-dated financings, capital calls and trades finance, asset-backed financings, and insured or guaranteed financings. Now, I guess last but by no means least, there's the credit profile and market size. And I know we'll delve into this a bit more, but just a very high-level snapshot. The private credit space reaches all the way from AAA down through sub-IG. And the IG part of these markets has been around for decades. So the overall private credit markets are ginormous. We think that the higher rated space, which is the investment grade and this crossover double B space that we'll be talking about, is approximately $1.5 trillion equivalent. It's typically dominated by the big institutional investors who are buying assets for their own or their clients' books. And there's an increase in number of funds here. Then you have the direct lending space, and we think that's a market of approximately the same size. This is more of a fund-based market, and there is definitely some decent data out there. In fact, our friends at Pemberton released an article recently which effectively had the markets at the same size.
That's great. Thanks, Stu. And you just mentioned it there, but obviously the focus of this podcast is crossover credit, which might be a term that some of our listeners don't hear that often. What do we mean by it? And how big is this universe relative to the overall private credit space?
Crossover is that space. It's the double B rated space, effectively. It's those at the highest credit quality end of the sub-investment grade universe, whether that's rated internally or externally. I really want to be clear at the start here that sub-investment grade and certainly double B rated credit does not mean low or poor investment quality. It might be that an issuer is of a size that wouldn't allow it to achieve an investment grade rating, but it might have credit metrics that are of really high quality, much more reflective of investment grade credit. On the other hand, it might be that the borrower or the project is slightly more leveraged than a typical investment grade issuer. But, you know, where you still believe in the strength of the underlying business proposition and the cash flows or asset backing, put that in context, you know, a corporate might have net debt to EBITDA of over 3.5 times, or an infrastructure project might be sized more closely to its debt service cover ratios, or incorporate some element of merchant or consumer risk. Now, from an asset class perspective, there's fundamentally no difference to the breadth of the asset classes we've already talked about. So issuers of double B credit quality are abundant in the corporate, infrastructure, real estate, and alternative spaces. And if you're willing to consider this credit space, it increases the opportunity set greatly. And that can be highly complementary to the investments you make in either the investment grade or the direct lending space. There's a really wide range of sector investment potential here. So it can include, this double B space can include less mature but valuable sectors such as healthcare, clean energy, and digital infrastructure. Double B funding may come in fixed rate form and with a maturity profile of, say, 5 to 10 years, can be a bit longer. Now, you asked about market size. There's going to be some estimations here, but the double B space has always been the heartland of banks. And I know I phrase this badly, but for the institutional market, it's been a bit like a middle child. Investors focused on the investment grade space are there for stability and diversification that brings, and they venture down the credit curve in single B for the additional return you get for that risk. Institutional investors do invest in double B assets. We've seen that here in the UK, the US, and it's been quite popular in some regional European markets such as France. But that trade-off of the risk and return, particularly noting capital charges, which I think we'll come on to in due course, hasn't really been enough to encourage seismic activity in that space. But I think there's theoretically a huge demand for institutional investment here from both investment and borrower communities. Borrowers want to diversify their capital sources, particularly for larger scale and longer term funding that will complement their bank financing. And I guess due to the either borrowing size or their own size, issuing public bonds might simply not be a practical option. In terms of the market sizes, and I'll try and talk here in a European context, and it will definitely be very much based on estimates. In the corporate space, we think that the UK and the European double B institutional market is about £15 to £20 billion per annum equivalent. And European issuance or euro issuance really drives that figure. In the infrastructure space, we think that the UK and European double B space is approximately £35 to £45 billion in size equivalent. And it often comprises areas that have a real environmental impact, actually, such as renewables, heating, battery storage, carbon capture. In the alternative space, it's really difficult to quantify because it's such a multifaceted marketplace with so many subsectors. It's really difficult to get your arms around because it includes areas such as securitized assets, speciality and trade finance. So it's probably £1 trillion plus. And it's largely USD issuance followed by euros and then sterling. And then finally, you've got the real estate space and the UK sub-investment grade lending market, we think is approximately £50 to £60 billion in size. So it's not all double B, but that's certainly the sub-investment grade space. And that will include good kind of secondary grade property opportunities and also some development financing as well.
Great. Thanks for that, Stu. And I think we'll touch upon some of the points that you were making just there about kind of how this interacts with other forms of private credit and kind of how it can be deployed in the portfolio a little bit later. I'd like to turn, though, kind of to a more immediate question that I'm sure a lot of our listeners have on their lips. And that is, well, I guess two questions. One, why do we like this asset class? And I guess two, kind of following on from that, what are the characteristics that you believe are particularly appealing about this section of the private credit universe?
Sure. So I've said that double B rated credit does not mean low or poor investment quality. So if I put my portfolio management hat on, including an allocation to the double B space can offer lots of different things. As an individual focused on constructing hopefully well-diversified and stable portfolios, getting access to great credit opportunities, whether that's investment grade or otherwise, is a seriously powerful thing to have in the arsenal. And that's a difficult word as a Spurs supporter. The spread pickup also has the potential to be more than sufficient to compensate for the high risk associated with those investments. A key reason for looking at the double B-rated private credit issuers is, I think, is to identify those that have strong financial profiles but might be considered sub-investment grade largely because of other reasons. There's often a trade-off, actually, I think, between the financial risk and the business risk of such issuers. So, you know, if a company's business risk is comparable to that of investment grade assets, you know, meaning it operates in a stable industry with some strong, reliable earnings, investors, I think, you know, will be willing to, or might be willing to, accept slightly weaker metrics than in investment grade, or even some structural subordination. And, you know, by doing that, it allows investors to invest in companies with solid business financials whilst potentially achieving those high returns. Nick, you've spoken to me a few times before in some of these events, and I think, as you know, I love to talk about the mantra of credit structure and pricing. I've covered a bit on the credit side here, but from a structural perspective, when you move into that double B space, you know, there's typically a greater ability to influence a financing structure, even more so than in the IG space. And, you know, protections can really help you as an investor in an early stage influence control if things don't move the way you want them to or expect them to have moved. From a pricing perspective, I've touched on it, but, you know, you can generate higher risk-adjusted returns than investment grade. But to be clear, you know, in the double B space, you're not typically generating the double-digit returns of the direct lending space. Investments will price with a premium above public fixed income, so public bonds. Two other things I think worth noting. One is the performance. Historic public data, so publicly rated high-yield bonds, overall, they've experienced really low absolute levels of default. I think it's, you know, 1% weighted average. And I think from a loss perspective, it's around about 0.6% average over the last 40 years. The same data is not really available for the private debt space. But what I can say is, I think from the experience of the asset management division here and our experience as investors, is that there's really only incremental differences in probability of default between the triple B minus space and the double B rated assets. And that's just amongst, you know, other opportunities.
Thanks, Stu. One thing I'd love you to be able to do here is kind of bring this to life a little bit. And kind of talk about what a typical crossover deal looks like. Maybe you can give just a few examples of maybe certain different borrowers or different geographies and kind of how this looks, you know, in each of those scenarios.
Sure. In terms of a typical type of investment in double B, honestly, I don't think there's such a thing. But what I can try and do is put some meat on the bones with a couple of examples. And I'm going to really kind of explicitly pick on UK infrastructure and corporates. And that's no disrespect to real estate or alternatives. So in the corporate space, we often see businesses in the services and manufacturing sectors, names that are looking to diversify away from bank funding and extend debt maturities. Some of those businesses are, you know, of the equivalent kind of FTSE 250, 350 size, or big private companies of that kind of size. But what characterizes them as double B rather than investment grade might be diversification of revenues. So potentially they're, you know, more geographically focused on the UK, for example, and that can hinder an investment grade rating, or that they're running slightly high leverage. Spreads in this area, so credit spreads, would be, you know, much more akin to the higher 200s to low 300s. And I think a good way to characterize this particular space is that this is the forgotten land of the private debt space, and is an area I think the market should take much more time to consider, because there's some very, very good quality credits in that area. Then if we move across to the UK infrastructure space, solar is a great example. Huge need for renewable energy, and there's a really sizable opportunity, and there has been over the years actually, in the UK solar space, where you can finance, for example, a portfolio of ground-mounted solar assets, often benefiting from some longer-term power purchase agreements. Now, investing in those types of projects is really attractive for investors for various reasons, particularly the environmental aspect, often longer-term cash flows backed by these agreements. The assets have pretty low kind of operational complexity, and I think they're well understood from a generation capability perspective. But there might be a little bit of price risk in there, and it might be that the financing's been sized very tightly to a, you know, an appropriate debt service cover ratio. From a financing perspective, structural perspective, you know, it's secured, it's highly covenanted, and you get significant debt pay down through scheduled amortization during the life of the debt investment. And we'd expect a transaction like that, it, you know, particularly if it's in the double B, double B minus range, to be priced in the kind of maybe mid 300s over risk-free rates. So reflecting a really decent premium to public comparators.
Great. So we mentioned this earlier when you're kind of giving your introduction, and I'm sure that our listeners would love to kind of know where this fits into a portfolio. Just wondering if you can talk firstly about how this complements IG private credit and direct lending. And then maybe we could also look a little bit about how this might serve as an equivalent to other private markets assets.
So overall, the double B rated private debt investment space, I think it can be a key part of investment strategies, particularly those that are focused in balancing risk and reward. So basically getting additional yield while managing capital preservation for long-term liabilities. It already is for some investors. And in fact, we utilize the double B space in one of our funds. But ultimately, it does come down to the risk appetite and return objectives of a client or a fund. Diversifying with double B investments can help you to increase portfolio diversification. And that might, you know, strengthen economic resilience. And one can do that by using all of the core asset classes in that space. You can invest more selectively by accessing a broader landscape of opportunity. And that provides for, and it also provides, I think, a better understanding of relative issuer strength, because you're able to see that many more issuers across different parts of the credit curve. You can also access opportunities which should benefit from some long-term structural trends. So, you know, we've talked a little bit earlier about opportunities, for example, in renewables, but, you know, a great example here would be something like digital infrastructure, which is still, you know, in some of its early stages of development. And many opportunities do sit at this stage in the sub-investment grade space. So ultimately, I think double B is the missing part of the debt portfolio toolbox, if that's the right expression. And I think it complements both the IG and the direct lending spaces.
Thanks, Stu. I know you also mentioned earlier the potential market size and some evolution of appetite here. Could you just maybe expand on that a little bit?
Yeah, of course. There's actually a bit of regulatory context to this, particularly as it relates to UK insurers who are governed by the Solvency II framework. So there have been some recent Solvency UK reforms that have removed barriers on the ability of UK life insurers to benefit from investing in sub-investment grade assets. This included the removal of the cap on the matching adjustment that may have been claimed from individual sub-investment grade assets. So it allows firms to benefit from an additional risk-adjusted spread on those assets. Previously, there was something I think is probably best described as a cliff edge, and this disincentivized sub-investment grade investment by annuity providers. The cliff edge ensured that the MA benefit of investing in sub-IG assets was limited. And there was also a higher capital charge than for investment grade equivalent investments. So what you had was a large scale avoidance of sub-investment grade assets. And the effect wasn't just on sub-investment grade. So it also affected lower investment grade assets, for example, triple B minus, which is where a lot of investments get positioned, particularly in the renewable space, because investors were potentially worried that a future downgrade would see a movement, you know, obviously it would see a movement to sub-investment grade and therefore have significantly higher capital charges. So overall, the movement, I think, in the solvency reforms are positive. We'll have to see how that goes. But with the removal of the cap, we think the investment firms can now consider a much greater allocation to double B opportunities. And I think the UK rightly sees this as one of the key ways of encouraging investment in new and innovative asset classes that might sit in that crossover space. It certainly fits into the ethos, I think, of encouraging more productive finance. It's definitely not without scrutiny, though. I personally think that that's not a bad thing, given that you know, this will be investments potentially made on behalf of people's hard-earned pension money. There's going to be a need to meet additional requirements like the prudent person's principle, and there are some additional risk management requirements that could include things like stress testing and scenario testing. But ultimately, I think it's worth it. And asset managers with the requisite skill sets and governance should, I think, be really well positioned to extend their lending and give those benefits to their clients.
Great. So we've come to our last question now, and I just want to turn this around a little bit and look at what maybe investors or clients might be thinking and whether you're hearing anything about kind of what people might be looking for when they seek out a manager to invest in this area of the private credit universe.
Yeah, honestly, I'm not sure that it fundamentally differs from the kind of attributes that you'd be looking for in an asset manager across all parts of the kind of credit curve. But noting that, you know, there is an increased kind of risk profile by moving down the credit curve, I think that here are some of the things that I think and I think differentiate managers here. I think first and foremost, it's strong credit analysis and ratings skills, really having experts at analyzing credit across all of the asset classes and being able to do so in areas where potentially there's higher risk than just, you know, an investment grade, not having to rely, for example, on public ratings. I think the other areas would be, you know, experience in structuring the financings to get appropriate protections, given that you're investing for, you know, a potentially longer period of time. Strength of asset management is, for me, number one, because I always think that the most important role you play as an asset manager is to preserve your capital. I think the answer's in the title of the name, asset manager. So you want the resource and expertise to conduct regular ongoing analysis and to ensure that performance is well monitored. And that also means knowing how to respond if things aren't going the way that you expect them to. And I think finally, I think being well-resourced is really important, and being well-governed. I mean, it kind of goes without saying, but ensuring that you've got good risk oversight and good performance analytics.
Excellent. Stu, thank you so much for your time today.
My pleasure, Nick. Thank you.
As a reminder, this podcast is intended for investment professionals only and shouldn't be shared with a non-professional audience. The views expressed in this podcast are those of L&G's Asset Management Division, as at the date of publication. This podcast is for informational purposes only, and we're not soliciting any action based on it. The information discusses general market, economic, or political issues, or industry or sector trends. It does not constitute research or investment, legal or tax advice. It is not recommendation or advertisement to buy or sell securities or pursue a particular investment strategy. Assumptions, opinions, and estimates are provided for illustrative purposes only. There is no guarantee that any forecast made will come to pass. No party shall have any right of action against L&G in relation to the accuracy or completeness of the information contained in this podcast. Where this podcast contains third-party information, the accuracy or completeness of such information cannot be guaranteed, and we accept no responsibility or liability in respect of such information. Not for distribution to any person in any jurisdiction where such distribution would be contrary to local law or regulations. Copyright 2025. Legal and General Investment Management Limited is authorised and regulated by the Financial Conduct Authority. Unless otherwise stated, references herein to L&G, we and us are meant to capture the global conglomerate that includes, in the European Economic Area, LGIM Managers Europe Limited, authorised and regulated by the Central Bank of Ireland as a UCITS management company pursuant to European Communities Undertaking for Collective Investment in Transferable Securities Regulations 2011 as amended, and as an Alternative Investment Fund Manager pursuant to the European Union Alternative Investment Fund Managers Regulations 2013 as amended. In the USA, Legal and General Investment Management America, a US SEC regulated investment advisor. In Japan, Legal and General Investment Management Japan, KK, a Japan FSA registered investment management company. In Hong Kong, issued by Legal and General Investment Management Asia Limited, which is licensed by the Securities and Futures Commission. And in Singapore, issued by LGIM Singapore Pte Limited, company registration number 20223187 6W, which is regulated by the Monetary Authority of Singapore. For full terms and conditions, please visit our website. To find more content, you can check us out on LinkedIn or on our website.